The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So I'm going to be talking about letting go. And letting go can be looked at from many different levels. And I'm going to be just talking about what I have learned in recent years for myself about what it means to me to let go. And since today is Keizan's day, Great Master Keizan, I just wanted to mention just a little bit about Keizan. I apologize for not talking about Keizan, but letting go is what came up. So that's what I'm going to talk about. However, Keizan obviously let go, so that ties it together. And Keizan's mother was devoted to Avalokiteshvara and prayed to Avalokiteshvara to have a child, and she did, and his name was Gyosho. And she took Gyosho to the shrine of Avalokiteshvara many times and told him stories and taught him the scripture of Avalokiteshvara. She wanted him to be an excellent person for the sake of the world. And as you've heard, he had a bad temper when he was a child. And he wanted to be a monk from a very early age, and when his parents said no, he threw a temper tantrum and refused to eat for 3 days until they allowed him to do that. And then they went again to the Avalokiteshvara shrine, and he prayed that he would be an excellent monk. And what his mother said to him, truly, even if there is only a little of this underlying compassion in us, it is still good. And she encouraged him to train with great feeling and a gentle heart. And it was during his early years of training, I believe, when he was just about to, he was really angry at some people, I think, who were sleeping in the hall. And he was in charge of the hall, and he was just about to really get angry at them, and he had a vision or a remembrance of his mother saying, be gentle. And that's when he let go of anger. And it said that he was a very gentle, compassionate, and kind monk. So that's just a little flavor of Keizan, who I'm sure most of you know was the third ancestor after Dogen. So now I'm going to be talking about letting go. And some people find the word letting go to be a problem. They don't like that word, or it worries them, or it's confusing. They don't know what it means. How do I let go? You know, I try and let go and it doesn't go away. But letting go is not pushing something away or trying to get rid of it. It's actually being with what is going on and seeing and not holding on to, not clinging. The offertory at the end of the Sharangama ceremony, one of the lines is, may all who are mired down in the three evil paths of existence or are caught in the eight difficult situations let go of their suffering. And I used to always find that reassuring. Oh, we don't have to hold on to our suffering. We can let it go. Another way of looking at this is putting down the burden. putting it down. So I'll just tell you a little bit about what I have learned. When I was a young monk, I remember one of the more senior monks saying something about letting go. And I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something to the effect of, all you have to do is let go, or all I know how to do is let go. And as a young monk, this didn't seem like enough. Because to me, letting go meant there would be nothing there. So what if I let go of my anger? Then what would be there? Just this miserable me without the anger. And and I just couldn't see the point. I wanted to get something. I knew that I was suffering, and I wanted to find that which was not suffering. And when I was suffering, or when I felt these feelings, I just wanted them to go away. And I wanted to find peace. I wanted to find Avalokiteshvara, compassion. I wanted to know there was compassion. And although I did let go to some degree, because sometimes I touched on something, or maybe it was just the deep pity of the unborn trying to keep me going on this path. But I think I did manage to let go at times. But I also held on. And I kept trying to change things and find things. And I looked outside myself, and I blamed others. And I still can remember the day in the meditation hall when I realized it has nothing to do with anyone else. I am the source of my suffering. And although this was told to me, I think when I had first come here as a lay trainee, that the source of our suffering is greed, hate, and delusion, and that we can change that, it wasn't until that day that I actually saw from my meditation that it wasn't anybody else's fault. This was something I had to do something about. Now, one thing I found, again, was when, not that I don't feel afraid now, I certainly know fear as much as anyone else, but when I first came here, I was deeply afraid. And I also worried about everything, intense worry. And when worry or fear would arise, I would try and find that place that wasn't afraid or that wasn't worried. And actually a few times when I actually just looked directly at the fear or looked directly at the worry, I did find that place. But that didn't always happen, and I still had the tendency to try to find that and to not just be with the fear or the worry. I think one of the fears we have in regards to letting go is fear of the unknown. What will there be if we let go? And in those days, I didn't really trust that what I was looking for was already there if I let go, that we have everything we need within us, and when we persist in trying to find something, we still have the greed and the desire. And that it's actually in letting go of the greed and desire and just being with whatever's there that we find what we're looking for. And this takes faith, courage, and persistence or perseverance. Now, I've talked about perseverance many times, and this is something that's so important to our practice, to never give up, to just keep on trying, because we will get through these things if we just keep going, no matter what. from Zena's Eternal Life on the chapter on the heart of Manjushri. I didn't bring it with me. It's not River Master Jiyu who says this, but I think it's Obako Kiyun or something, somebody like that. It says, ordinary people look outwards, whilst followers of the way look into their own minds. But the real Dharma is to forget both the external and the internal. The former is easy enough, the latter very difficult. Men are afraid to forget their own minds, fearing to fall through the void with nothing to which to cling. They do not know that the void is not really void, but the real realm of the Dharma. So there are many things that seem to stand in the way of our letting go. First of all, not knowing what it means to let go is the first obstacle. Letting go can bring up the idea of getting rid of or pushing away. But letting go is actually not turning away from anything. When fear arises, it's the willingness to just be with the fear, not turn away from it, not try and make it go away, just to be with it and see what it has to teach us. I think it's the constantly not turning away that actually allows us to let go. And also trusting that what arises is not the true reality. So it's a matter of not turning away and not believing in that which is arising. Sometimes when something arises that is painful or difficult, feelings, especially there are things that we've been trying to avoid all our lives, there can be a tendency, for me anyway, to shut down, to distract ourselves in some way, to try and get someone to reassure us or make us feel better. However, we can take the step of just being with that which is difficult to bear. And yet when you just are with that, or just look at that, it's okay. And something deeper within you knows it's good to do. And you can touch on something deeper. It's just being with whatever that is without adding anything to it, and then it goes of itself. I find for myself now, when in the early days when I would try and get away from these very difficult feelings, I now try and just be with them with loving kindness. It's hard to just read from your notes. I'm trying to be spontaneous here, but I'll just have to fall back on my notes when nothing else comes. One of the things I was thinking about when I was preparing this talk was one of the things that I find most difficult to look at within myself Is the selfishness or unkindness, meanness, greed, uncaring, all the things about ourselves that we don't like? For me, it's easier to kind of get my courage up and look at painful things and difficult things and just sit with them with kindness than to look at the things that I don't like about myself. And I'll give you an example of something that that came up recently and has come up in the past, and it's just a very simple example. But when we have group photographs taken, and for many years I was the oldest monk who wasn't a master. And so all the masters would be in the front row and I'd be in the back row. And of course this would bring up very painful feelings in me. And I remember, I think I told some of you this, but at one time this group photo was taken where I really showed my, it's like that. at any rate, they ended up putting that very picture on the internet and kept it up for a long time. And when I saw it there, I thought, no matter how I feel, I am not going to do that again. I was so embarrassed. And so one time, many years ago, when I had just done a three-week retreat, and I was feeling pretty good, we had a group photograph taken, and I didn't care at all. I was just really content and peaceful, and I sat happily in the back row or the second row or something, and it was great. I just didn't care. So recently we had a group photo taken, and now I'm in the front row. But lo and behold, what came up was, well, I want to be in my proper place in the front row. And I thought, oh my God, you know. I wish this wasn't arising, you know. I wish I was feeling totally selfless and didn't care like everybody else, although who knows what they were thinking. But, you know, I've been working on myself a lot lately and not judging myself and just being with myself and not turning away and accepting myself. And so I just said, okay, when group photos are taken, this is what arises. And okay, so what? So I let it arise, and I didn't go through the agony of beating myself over the head for being still this totally selfish, petty person after 38 years as a monk, which I would have done in the past, although it would have probably been less years then. So... But what I'm starting to see is that in certain situations, certain things arise. When I get really stressed, I can get annoyed very easily, or I don't feel compassion for others, or all kinds of incidents occur where things arise within me that I don't like. So what I'm learning is, okay, this is what I have to work with. And I can just be with those feelings and not act on them. And I think the important part of letting go is allowing ourselves to be with whatever arises, not turning away from it, looking at ourselves with loving kindness and compassion, but not acting on it. So that sometimes it can be really hard not to act on it because it feels real, it feels like it would relieve us of our suffering, and yet it's the not acting on it that helps us to let go. So what I see of this letting go is not an active act of letting go. It's an active act of not turning away from, not acting on, being with, and not holding on to. And this can take a lot of faith in something deeper, that we can just be with whatever is going on. And I did a talk a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday where my mind has just gone blank, so forgive me for that. Let me see if I can get it back. No, I'm sorry, it's gone. I have to let go now of what people are going to think when they listen to it on the internet. It's interesting when you have, when you're giving a talk, it seems like a lot of things in regards to that talk comes up, and you have the opportunity to look at what you're holding on to and what you're letting go of. Another example I can give you is every 2 weeks, usually, one of the senior monks does a spiritual examination ceremony where all the monks come up, if they wish, the novices need to, but the seniors have a choice, come up in reverse seniority order and ask a question of the monk standing there. And the monk is trying to be in meditation and answer the questions from meditation. And this is something that can make a monk nervous if you're the one up there. And I think it can make someone nervous if they're going up to ask a question. But I really wanted to be able to answer from meditation and get the self out of the way. And for some reason, I felt like I was able to do it. Maybe just sheer luck or the compassion of the eternal. But I was able to be there, and I thought, really listen to what people were asking and really try and answer to the best of my ability. And that place of selflessness feels really good. So when I was asked to do the Dharma talk, I was hoping I could again be in that place of selflessness. But what came up was, I hope I don't make a fool of myself, and I hope I look good, and I hope I give a good talk, and here we go again. I had to just accept that this is what's coming up, this is human nature, and I just have to prepare my talk and give it. Whether I'm at from a place of selflessness or a place of caring what I look like, I have to just do the best I can. And it's very interesting because in this book, Small Boat, Great Mountain, this is a book by Ajahn Amaro, a Theravadan monk. He talks about being afraid. And he says, one of the things I am fond of quoting is a little fact I find extremely significant. A number of years ago, a survey was done with many thousands of people. I think it was conducted by Harvard's psychology department. The purpose of the survey was to find out what makes people afraid. In the top 10, dying of cancer was about number 4. I forget what number 3 was. Number 2 was nuclear war. The number 1 fear was public speaking. Ajahn Amaro is very humorous, and he says, essentially, this says that we are more prepared to live with the destruction of the entire planet. than we are to live with public embarrassment, also known as ego death in some circles. Isn't that interesting? The other top 10 items were things like losing all your possessions or being physically attacked. None of these are exactly fun, but it is notable that the number 1 fear was public speaking. We are more afraid of dying on stage than we are of our own physical demise. So, I don't know if that's still true, but I know one time when I I went up to give a talk in the guest house, and I hadn't given talks in a long time, and I was totally afraid. And I got there, and I could hardly speak. I could hardly get anything out. And everybody came up to me afterwards. They were so full of compassion, and they told me this. Public speaking is really hard. Everybody has trouble with public speaking. And so maybe it was helpful because it brought out everybody else's compassion. But it's a common thing. But I think we do start to see that it isn't really what's important. Being embarrassed or humiliated, it's not truly what's important. I mean, not being is not truly what's important. And what can happen is if we're truly working on ourselves, working on looking at, accepting, not holding on to, whatever arises, then we can find that which is truly important, and it can break through. Because our true nature is always there, and we're longing to be one with it, and act from it. The self can temporarily obscure it, but if we keep persevering and making an effort to change, it will come through. Sometimes we get a glimpse of what's important, and then what is arising loses its grip. So last night, as I was, again, trying to prepare my talk, I became really anxious. And I did what I'm telling you not to do. I tried to make it go away. And it wouldn't. It wouldn't go away. So I thought, okay, this is what I'm doing my talk on. I'll just be with this. And it stayed there. But I woke up during the night, and I knew what was truly important. I knew that what I really wanted to do was, when I gave this talk, say something that was true and of value. And that was more important than what people thought of my talk. However, the stealth is still, you know, arising, saying, well, I hope it's okay. But we can, if we keep on working on this, get glimpses of what's truly important and let go. And it's not that we force ourselves to let go, but we just let go. It just happens when we're working on ourselves. Someone asked me at the spiritual examination ceremony about leaping beyond all fear, and we do talk about this, and it's in the litany of the great compassionate one, Om to the one who leaps beyond all fear. And this person said, I keep trying to leap beyond all fear, and fear is still there. There's still another fear there, and it doesn't go away. And for me, leaping beyond all fear is, again, letting the fears be there. That's really, I think, a lot of times we're actually afraid of fear. We're afraid to feel fear. So allowing ourselves to be with that fear, no matter how difficult it is or how deep the fear is in a sense leaping beyond it and being willing to be with it and trusting again in something deeper. And also that fear doesn't have to stop you from doing what is good to do. At the first spiritual examination ceremony that I went to as a new monk, my first question was to Reverend Master Jiyu, why am I so afraid? And her answer was, don't ever not do anything because of fear. And I really used that as a guideline because there were a lot of things I was asked to do here that I was afraid of doing, and I just had to do them. And so that really helped me, having that as a guideline, not to let fear stop us. And another example, I apologize for just talking about myself, but it seems to be I have a lot of examples, and this is how I do my Dharma talks, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure which. But I used to play the organ here, and I did okay at morning service, but when we'd have a big ceremony, like the Eva Vesak, I would get so scared for that. And one thing I found after, you know, doing this many times is in order to actually be able to play, I had to look directly at the fear. If I tried to make it go away or pretend it wasn't there, I couldn't actually play because I was hiding from being present. So I found I had to go, and I can remember sitting at the organ, afraid, with my mind telling me, you don't know what those notes are. Your hands don't know what to do. And it was like everything was a total blank. I didn't know what the notes were. I didn't know what to do. And yet here it was time to play, and I had to put my hands down and do something. And I had to just trust. And that was a really good lesson for me, in trusting in something deeper than the fears. And somehow I was able to play. But it was only by looking at the fears. And so this was a really good lesson for me, not to turn away, but to face the fears as they arise. And I'd like to read something from this book, Small Boat, Great Mountain, which is Ajahn Amaro telling a story of Ajahn Chah's greatest fears. And for those of you who don't know who Ajahn Chah is, he was a very well-known and great Theravadan master in Thailand. And Ajahn Chah was not afraid of much. He was a very strong presence. And but in their culture, there was a deep fear of ghosts. And apparently the ghost stories they used to tell in Thailand were much more gruesome than the ghost stories that were told over here. So he had a lifelong fear of ghosts. And after, you know, he'd been a monk for many years, and it says here he was well aware that he had been avoiding this fear. It was something he had never really resolved. When he was a young kid, he was known to be both strong and self-reliant. As an adult, he was also a pretty tough nut. Yet well into his monastic life, he was terrified of ghosts and had a very strong fear of corpses. Whenever he went to stay on his own in the forest, he would recite protective verses to keep the ghoulies and the ghosties at a distance. He decided he had been running away from his fear of ghosts for long enough. He was going to confront it once and for all. So he spent, he put up a mosquito net in the cremation grounds. And he decided to sit there all night long and face his fears. And there was a cremation of a young child. And during the funeral, he was okay because there were a lot of people there. But after the funeral, this intense terror arose in him. And he was totally afraid. And but he managed, he forced himself to sit there all night long, and it never abated. And at the end of the night, he thought, okay, I've done that. I've sat with my fear. It's over. I can go home now. But then he realized, no, 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 no. That's not transcending fear. That's just enduring it. I haven't got through this at all. I'm still absolutely terrified. I can give myself the excuse that I don't have to do it, but the terror is still there in front of me, and I'm determined to get through that, through this. So he decided to stay another night and confront the fear. And he thought, at least there isn't going to be another burning. But sure enough, an adult died that second day. So Ajahn Chah stayed there through the cremation, and then again everyone left. All he had to protect himself was his practice and his mosquito nest. Ajahn Chah said that, "My mosquito nest felt like a fortress circled with seven concentric walls. Even the presence of my alms bowl was reassuring." He made the resolution to sit there and be with his feelings, knowing this was the best way to get through the fear. The night before, as he sat locked in place, there had been the usual animal noises, crickets going on all night long, and leaves and twigs dropping from the trees. There was nothing special, just familiar sounds. On the second night, things changed. He was sitting there around midnight when he thought he heard footsteps. When you live in the forest, you get to know what animals make, what kinds of sounds. You know the difference between deer and bear sounds. Lizard and snakes make their distinct noises. Ajahn Chah was sitting there thinking, "I hear footsteps. It's not an animal. It's a two-footed creature, and the person is coming from the fire." So he said to himself, "Don't be ridiculous. Maybe it's one of the villagers coming to see if I'm all right. Maybe they've come to offer me something, and if they do, they will come up and say hello." Nevertheless, he was determined to just sit there with his eyes closed. Then he heard these footsteps, thump, 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 getting closer and closer. He started to tighten up. The sweat poured out of him, and he told himself, "Oh, don't panic. It's just one of the villagers with heavy steps." In his mind's eye, he could see the charred body. He could see a skeleton with guts hanging out, the scorched bits of flesh hanging off, skin and eyes dropping down the cheek, and a half-burned mouth. As he felt this rank mess of flesh walking towards him, he told himself, "Don't believe this. This is just your imagination. Stop, be still, concentrate, and let go of the fear." Here it is, trying to let go of the fear. In the meantime, the footsteps were getting closer and closer. Then he heard the steps going around and around him, thump, thump, thump. They're circling around again and again. By this time, he was in a state of white-hot fear. He had gone beyond anxiety. His body was locked solid and sweating bullets. He was absolutely rigid. Then the presence came and stood right in front of him. Ajahn Chah was still determined to keep his eyes closed, not even a peek. At this point, he was so completely fear-stricken, it burst. The fear system was going at absolute full force when suddenly he had the thought, "All these years I've been reciting, the body is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, perceptions are impermanent, the body is not self, feelings are not self, perceptions are not self, mental formations are not self, consciousness is not self." So he wasn't just afraid, he was also very concentrated and very alert. The insight flashed into his consciousness. "Even if this is some terrible ghoulish monster that is going to attack me, all that it can attack me is that which is not me, or the real me. All that it can harm is the body, the feelings, the perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. That is the only stuff that can get damaged, and that's not me. That's not self, or I would say the real self. That which knows all of this, these cannot be touched." And instantly the feelings of terror evaporated. It was like switching on a light. It disappeared completely, and he went into an incredibly blissful state. He went straight from a total dukkha. Pain and incandescent fear to an extraordinary bliss. His mind was alert, and as that happened, he heard the footsteps, thump, 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 getting fainter. Eventually, the footsteps disappeared. He never found their source. So, for me, the lesson here is that he wouldn't have had that thought come to him if he hadn't been training all those years. So all the effort we put into training comes through for us when we need it. And it may seem like we're not doing much and we're not really getting anywhere, but when we need it, it's there. And also that it was by facing the fear, by actually being with it. And you could see he tried to let it go, but it didn't do him much good. But by facing it directly, it let go of himself. It let go by itself. And this was the training of all those years of what he was doing. Well, I don't think I'm going to say anything else that I've written here. One thing that I think is helpful is looking at the Sharangama Litany, and one section of it, I think, talks about what I've been trying to talk about today. And that is, I seem to be able to find it. By being mindful, may I be cleansed of fear of rulers and whatever else would dominate me, of fear of thieves and whatever else would rob or deprive me, of fear of fire and whatever else may inflame or consume me, of fear of flood and whatever else would overwhelm or drown me. So this is the teaching here. By being aware of it, it doesn't overwhelm us. It doesn't consume us. It doesn't deprive us. And this goes on and on of all the many fears that we might have. And we can be mindful of all of them and trust that we can just let them arise and let them pass. And for some reason, Reverend Master Khotan's Vesak song came to mind this morning, and I thought I would not sing, but read one verse of it, because it, I think, will end this talk on a very cheery note. Yes, oh yes, there is a way from the pain and from the fears, from the sorrow and the tears, to the truth that lives for aye. Yes, oh yes, there is a way to the joy and to the bliss of Nirvana's happiness. Yes, oh yes, there is a way. And we all know that way. It's not easy, but it's worth it. So, thank you.